Moscow's Lefortovo prison. For almost 1 year now, this has been the home of an American journalist, a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, Evan Gershkovich. And for nearly 1 year now, Gershkovich's life has been that of a prisoner in the infamous jailhouse. Inmates who spoke to Russian media often described Lefortovo as an arrest house of, quote, increased isolation. Lawyers and prisoner families often wait weeks, if not months, before receiving the right to a visit. Inmates are reportedly not allowed to sleep during the day and, while they do not work, they face long hours in their individual cells, with practically no possibility to socialize. But this video is not about Lefortovo prison. It is about Evan Gershkovich, and the fact that the name of a journalist should never appear in one sentence with Lefortovo, or any other prison in the world. In just one moment, in March 2023, Evan's life slipped from that of an active reporter to that of a simple prisoner. He is now behind bars on fabricated charges of espionage. Charges which are absurd to anyone who knows Evan, as the cheerful reporter he was, in spite of the increasing darkness surrounding Russia. A successful chef in his previous life before becoming a correspondent in Moscow, and a person who knew how to enjoy life, but simply not a spy, in any way. But Russian authorities seem to think differently. Over the past year, they have regularly extended Evan's pre-trial detention and kept him inside Lefortovo. If convicted, Evan faces between 10 and 20 years in prison. While a prisoner exchange with the United States was on the table ever since Evan was first arrested, the perspective of his release now seems further away than ever. At IPI, of course, we demand that Russian authorities immediately set Evan free. To talk about this situation, I am joined today by Polina Ivanova, a correspondent for FT. For the newspaper, Polina reports on Ukraine, Russia, the Caucasus, and Central Asia. Privately, she is a longtime friend of Evan, with whom she worked for several years in Moscow prior to his detention. My name is Kirill Wuchko. I am the Eastern Europe Advocacy and Monitoring Officer at IPI, and I welcome you to this new episode of the Press Freedom Files. First thing I wanted to ask you is, I mean, it's been a year that that your friend is in prison, and we know that we have and you have sent him letters. Is there anything that you would tell him today that you weren't telling him like before, like as in 1 year after since he's in prison?
I mean, not really. We continue to speak regularly via letters. You know, initially when he was first detained, because it felt very strange to not be texting my friend all the time, which is what we would always do, because we're both friends, but we also work in the same field, and most of our friends do as well. So we were all Moscow correspondents. And so a lot of our conversations were about work. And as a result, we're just chatting all the time. You know, something happens in the Russian news, something happens in our lives, something happens in the invasion of Ukraine. We were discussing these things all the time. So we had a very active active chat, and then suddenly it goes silent because your friend is arrested. It just pin drop silence. And for a long time, I kept sending the things that I thought about during the day as text messages to the same chat, basically to myself, effectively. And then would compile at the end of the week, would just take those text messages and put them into a letter and send that, because it would, you know, it just seemed like a kind of a continuation of the conversation that we were having before he was arrested. And then after a while, I just got used to the habit of every weekend sitting down and writing a proper letter. So I guess that's been the change. From, you know, momentary discussion to actual letter writing, like in the 19th century, you know.
Right. I mean, that's quite a change. And I mean, of course, you have the opportunity to at least to speak to him. What does he tell you in his letters, like when you message him with these?
I mean, we talk about books. We talk about how he's doing, what he's thinking about, you know, how he's dealing with the situation that he's in and the circumstances that he's in and how he's processing all of it. He's still very focused, very determined. He's very, you know, he knows that he has to get through this challenge. He doesn't know how long it will last, but he's very kind of focused on getting through it. And to be perfectly honest, you know, I would have gone completely kind of, I've lost my mind by now, but he's very with it, and he's really, it's just very impressive. It's extremely impressive.
You're seeing that he's kind of resilient despite all the conditions that he's in.
Extraordinary resilience. You know, he's very focused, and he doesn't really allow himself to get too upset, to kind of wallow, he makes sure that he sticks to his schedule, to reading, writing letters and this kind of thing. So he's really focused, which it's super impressive. And he spends a lot of time making us feel better. His friends, his family, cracking jokes, making sure that we're okay. And
kind of extraordinary for someone who's in prison to, you know, try to make things.
Yeah, exactly. Right,
it's rather the opposite. We should
exactly
make him feel better. And I mean, of course, like we know how Russian prison censorship works, and so we probably don't really get to discuss any of this. But do you have an idea of what he thinks of what has happened to him, of the situation he? Gotcha.
I mean, I know that he is, is a journalist and was working as a journalist in Russia, accredited, and was detained when he had full accreditation, and he was continuing to do exactly the same job that he'd always done and that all of us do, which is the job of a journalist. And he was doing it in Russia. It's not that his work changed. It's that, you know, the situation changed, Russia changed, the whole climate transformed in front of our eyes, and Evan was taken hostage. So I think he's very aware of that situation. That's the story of what happened.
So he doesn't really, I mean, trying to understand what I just heard, in the sense that, like, we are obviously facing an unjust arrest for someone who was simply doing his job. But you're saying that the situation changed, and maybe the correspondents who are in Moscow, they maybe didn't see this change coming, or is that what you're trying to say?
No, more that I think what I'm trying to say is that that Evan's work didn't change. So Evan continued to do the work of a journalist, the same work that he's been doing in Russia since 2017, since he first moved there as a kind of young rookie reporter, and he continued to do his job. And at some point, doing the work of a journalist in Russia, you know, transformed because Russia went to war. You know.
Yeah. So what did? Of course, we know that this was a huge thing. What happened last year when he was arrested? Do you know what do you make of how, like, the lives of correspondents in Russia changed after this event?
It's obviously a watershed moment. I mean, it's the first time that a journalist has been arrested in Russia, and a foreign correspondent has been arrested in Russia and held for this long since the Cold War. I mean, even the last incident, which I think happened in the 80s, was someone detained for a month. And, this is really a watershed and a completely different story. I think it sent a chill through the entire reporting community. And, you know, just today we heard news of the expulsion of an El Mundo reporter, a Spanish newspaper reporter, from Russia. And, you know, we see different acts of, intimidation and hostility towards foreign correspondents in Russia over the past 2 years, a huge amount of restrictions on what people are able to say, but also unable to, you know, legally able to write. But that's setting aside the crackdown on Russian national journalists, on local reporters, which is of a whole other order, and has completely transformed the climate in Russia.
Yeah, I mean, of course, when we saw even like the recent arrests, I mean, there were protests against globalization in Russia, and then there were like really mass arrests, if you run by like the over 20 of them. And this obviously completely changed, in the sense that before, as you were saying, also maybe you hinted before, foreign correspondents had kind of a, this may be a wrong word to use, but a kind of immunity to towards the situation, in the sense that, I don't know what you make of how you see this. Like, does this...
Yeah, I wouldn't say immunity, but it's just, there was a kind of, you know, an understanding that you were accredited, and you were doing your work as an accredited correspondent, you were receiving permissions from, you know, and after the start of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the full-scale invasion in 2022, those accreditation renewals shortened, that window shortened, so it became a renewal process every few months for foreign correspondents rather than once a year, which means that you were going through these regular checks, these regular, the foreign ministry regularly approving your continued work. And it's a very important process and one which has always functioned support and have journalists, foreign correspondents working in Russia, but then it collapsed.
That it collapsed, obviously. And should I put this in? Do you think that after what happened to Evan, correspondents in Russia, foreign correspondents, they can still do their jobs, or is it a very kind of restricted situation which they're operating in? Can we still get independent news from Russia in the situation?
It's obviously incredibly difficult. It's obviously incredibly difficult to, I mean, independent news from Russia is still feasible. And I would really point you to all of the fantastic work that is being done by local Russian reporters who are outside of the country and who are managing, despite the extraordinary difficulties in doing this kind of work, both from a security perspective, but also just from, you know, trying to maintain their coverage of Russia from abroad. So I would point you to Medusa, to the iStories, to Vyorska, to all of these different, some new, some kind of more established outlets, to TV Rain, you know, these sort of independent Russian media outlets that were forced to emigrate but continue to give independent and really genuine and truthful coverage of the country from abroad. It's a really, it's a challenge. For foreign correspondents, there is still scope to work, but it's a very difficult climate. Obviously, if you wanted to send a message with the arrest of a foreign correspondent, you know, arresting a Wall Street Journal reporter is really something. It definitely sends a message to everybody who does that job.
Sure. Just moving back to the situation Evan is in, we know that, like, well, Defortovo is not... I mean, different things are said of this prison. In any case, he's in prison for a year. That doesn't change whatever conditions he's in. What do you make of the possible future of his situation in this case? Or is there any clarity? What do you think?
There's very little clarity, and also we're not kept in the loop. These are conversations that happen behind closed doors, and but we do know we glean from, you know, the public statements that we see by different politicians, and we've seen, you know, even Vladimir Putin himself speak very openly about the need to, well, his desire to see some sort of political exchange happen. So we're, you know, I continue to be hopeful that that is a route for Evan's release.
Okay, so you would think that maybe there is still a chance, obviously, and because if there is no exchange, just as a reminder, he faces between 10 to 20 years in prison, according to Russia's criminal code, which is an impossible sentence to serve, I would say. Right, and when you see the international reaction to his arrest, what do you make of it? Is this enough? Can people be doing more to try to do something about it? Or does this not really have much importance? Because, as you said, the conversation's
happening. No, it's hugely important. It's hugely important. And we're very grateful for the international reaction, actually. I mean, sometimes it's shocking. You know, one day you're kind of going on holiday with your, you know, best friend and colleague, and the next moment you're looking at his face on the cover of Time magazine. It's quite a strange and surreal experience, and at the same time he's in jail and, you know, and you're not, and it's all very odd. But yes, the international attention has been amazing. I mean, we do all political prisoners, all journalists in jail, all critics and activists and other people who are jailed around the world, the most important thing that people can do is to keep their names and their stories at the forefront of people's minds, so that in any way possible, that's one of the ways to try and expedite their release, is to keep attention on their cases and also to keep writing letters. This is a call that I try to make whenever I can when I do these when I talk about Evan is that I've finally realized on this experience just how important it is to keep writing to prisoners. It's possible to do. There are so many organizations that facilitate this, and there are hundreds and hundreds of journalists, protesters, activists in jail around the world, and letters are a lifeline. It's an extraordinary lifeline, and they're so important. You ask about media attention. It's very important. It's important to keep these cases, it's important to keep these stories at the forefront of people's minds so that everybody's working as hard as possible for the release, for Evan's release, for the release of other journalists in jail. I would use that moment of international media attention to also call people to write to journalists in jail. Find the way to do that, and send letters, because they are a window to the outside world.
That's a very good message to send. And what do prisoners in Russian jails want to hear? What do they want to want?
Well, everything. I mean, prisoners. I know of the Russian context, right? Because this is what I've had to learn over the past year. They have access to information. They often have radio or television or some sort of news, but obviously that's very limited to just state media outlets, that kind of thing. So letters that tell you about even just, I don't know, Hollywood gossip or something like that gives people some connection to their world. So for example, something that I try and send regularly to Evan is information from our industry. So what's happening to different newspapers, who's hiring, who's firing, who's, because that's the sort of thing that we would normally chat about, the kind of thing that any journalist would be interested in is what's happening in their sphere, what's happening in their industry. And that's, and that's something that you're just not getting as a news source. So that's something that I had found was kind of a gap that I could fill, but people are just interested in, being able to also give them, to give people a chance to write back and to talk about how they're feeling, to have a chance to explain what, is going on in their lives and what they're thinking about and how they're dealing with the fact that they're in these four walls.
And I mean, from what you're saying, it sounds like just because someone is in prison doesn't mean we should talk to them differently. They just want to hear the same things as they would if you...
More so, exactly. They want the ordinary. They want the things that they're missing out of daily life, in fact, and a chance, I think, to also express what's going on in their lives, finding a way to, it's sometimes... I spend a lot of time trying to, if I'm on a walk or something like that, to try and put myself in Evan's shoes and try and imagine the different things that might be going through his head and what stage of thinking he's in or what emotional state he's in order just to be able to ask the right questions and to try and guess, what he's thinking about, and so that I'm better able to talk to him, because obviously our experiences are increasingly different over time. The more time passes, the more the further away everything is, the further away we are. So I try to think about, does he allow himself time to hope? Does he allow himself to daydream? Things like that, because it's, you sort of think, if I was in four walls for 365 days now, what would be the things that are going through my head?
Just out of curiosity, as far as I read, at least in this prison concrete one, he's not even really allowed to talk much to other prisoners, right?
No, Lefortovo is known for, it's quite an isolated place. I mean, we know this from also just, the past experiences of lots. It's housed some famous inmates dissidents and writers who've described their experience since, and in all of those accounts, the one thing that stands out is just how, it's a very isolating, it's an isolating place, and you don't have the kind of communal spaces, communal time that you might imagine when you think about a prison that you've seen in the movies. It's a very different thing.
So all the more the importance to send letters to Evan, to
keep him. Yes, exactly.
Why wait?
Send books, send letters, send poetry, send articles, whatever you can.
Okay. All right, well, that's a kind of positive thing to maybe end this conversation. And in any case, thank you so much, Polina, for taking the time to speak to us today. And I mean, together with you and everybody else, we just call again to the release of Evan, trying to be able to return it home as soon as possible, and for whoever has the decision-making power to make these decisions to, you know, make them as soon as possible. So
to return home to his family, to his friends, but also to return to work.
Right.
We need him to come back to work.
Especially. All right. Thank you so much, Polina.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a nice day.